I'll admit it's with a good deal of fascination I've been following the talks that Pope Benedict gave in Germany when he went back to his native country. You can certainly hear the overtone of Herr Dr. Josef Ratzinger in the very kind of elevated academic rhetoric. It's hard to imagine someone coming to America and addressing the Congress and talking about positivistic reason, which he did in front of the Reichstag. But you also hear, I think, a sort of cri de coeur from a pastor who's very concerned about the spiritual health of the country he came to visit. When he arrived in Berlin, he's on the tarmac, and he said, "I'm here as the head of state of the Vatican City State. I'm very happy to be fostering relations between the Vatican and Germany, but that's not my primary purpose." He said, "My primary purpose is to speak to you of God." Now, it might seem kind of a commonplace that the Pope is here to talk about God, but keep in mind, he was arriving at one of the most secular regions on the planet. Sociologists talk about contemporary Western society as perhaps the first one in recorded human history that's developing in a consciously secularist way, that's to say, without any reference to God. Go back now over the centuries, go across the cultures, every culture has some massive reference to God or the gods or to the sacred. But now they're saying, for maybe the first time in our history, there's a culture that is developing apart from God. And there's no more secular place on the planet than Northern Europe, especially in Germany. And so the Pope is in fact going as a kind of missionary to his home country to announce the gospel. I was especially struck by the speech he gave at the Reichstag. There he was now with the whole German government around him. And he made first this observation about law, which I thought was really interesting. He said, "Christianity at its best has never imposed law in a concrete way, deriving it in its particularity from revelation." And here he's contrasting it to other religious traditions, most notably Islam. Think of Sharia law, where you get very definite, concrete legal recommendations from the data of revelation. Christianity, said, never did that. Rather, it derived, or it relied in its legal thinking on Greek philosophy and on the practice of Roman law. Now, what that allowed for was a great independence and flexibility within the ambit of a Christian culture for lawyers, politicians, kings, and princes, and so on. Now, God knows there were clashes over the centuries between popes and emperors and kings and so on, but the Catholic tradition at its best never adopted theocracy as its ideal. It allowed for that independence and that flexibility within the political arena. So what the Pope was saying, I think, to the Reichstag now in part was, you have nothing to fear from the Catholic Church, as though it'll come intervening in your world in a sort of fussy way. That's not the Catholic tradition at its best. It relies on the sort of common philosophical and legal heritage. But then he added, so the flip side, he's a good professor. There's on the one hand, on the other hand. The other hand is, and I've talked about it before, that all positive law, which is to say the kind of law that legislation deals with, particular prescriptions, are rooted in the moral law. Positive law at its best nests in the moral law, which in turn nests in the divine law, which is identical to the divine mind. When that nesting relationship is forgotten, when positive law has now divorced itself from its moral and ultimately theological context, then it drifts in the direction of dysfunction at best, tyranny at worst. Again, I've talked about in other contexts before, law that is disassociated from morality in that sense becomes dysfunctional. There are certain elements that are not themselves the object of legislative deliberation. As you deliberate about the practicalities of particular laws, you're not debating the moral structure in which those laws make any sense. When they become either marginalized or the subject of democratic deliberation, then we're on a short road to chaos. And I was intrigued by the fact that Papa Ratzinger, Pope Benedict, was not reluctant to show the connection between Hitler and this reality, precisely in the Reichstag, this building that was famously set on fire by Hitler's followers in order to foster his political ends. He pointed out that this gang of robbers, he's quoting from Augustine there, this gang of robbers, the Nazi leadership, did precisely that. They divorced positive law from any reference to the moral law or to the mind of God. And when that happens, we have chaos. So it was a very interesting blending, I thought, of those two, a warning and then also a invitation to legislative freedom. He remarked as well that the human rights that we take for granted, appropriately, are a good example of this moral framework in which legislation has to take place. They're fundamental human rights that are not themselves the object of deliberation. They're taken for granted. But then he pressed the case, I think entirely appropriately. Where do the human rights come from? The rights to liberty, equality, etc. They come from God. It's only God who guarantees our fundamental equality, only God who guarantees our ultimate dignity. When that's forgotten, human rights are forgotten. When they're forgotten, then the law devolves into chaos. I think that's an extremely important, compelling argument, which he made in front of the Reichstag. I was then very much captivated by his talk at Erfurt. Erfurt's not that far from Berlin, and it's Luther's town, not where Luther was born, but where he went to university, where he joined the Augustinian monastery, and where he was ordained to the priesthood, and where he, you know, came of age as a religious person. The Pope addressed a ecumenical gathering at Erfurt, and he took Martin Luther as an example, as a sort of model of the God-preoccupied person. Now, to be sure, Joseph Ratzinger, the Pope is a Catholic after all, disagrees with the way that Luther concretely worked all that out, but no one can doubt that Martin Luther was someone who was obsessed with God, obsessed with his relationship with God, to know what God wants of him, to know what God is offering to him. And so he proposed him as a kind of model precisely for this time, when a forgetfulness of God is the problem in the West. Because the one thing you could never say about Martin Luther is that he had forgotten God. So I thought that was a very intriguing proposition for the Pope of Rome to make, that perhaps Luther, in his deep passion for God, is a sort of corrective to this hyper-secularized time.